This is Mythical.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
If old fashions are for traditionalists and vodka Red Bulls are for party animals, then who the hell are infected whitehead shots for? Today, we're talking about what your favorite cocktail says about you. Because this is a hot dog is a sandwich.
Ketchup is a smoothie.
Yeah, I put ice in my cereal, so what?
That makes no sense.
A hot dog is a sandwich.
A hot dog is a sandwich.
What?
Welcome to our podcast, A Hot Dog is a Sandwich, the show where we break down the world's biggest food debates. I'm your host, Josh Scherer.
And I'm your host, Nicole Iniedi.
And today we are excited to be joined by Greg Tishon. Greg's the host of the YouTube show How to Drink, a show about making drinks and how to drink them. He lives in New York City, and even though he's never worked in a bar, he sure enjoys making cocktails, drinking cocktails, and talking about movies, video games, and books all along the way. He's no stranger to the classic cocktails as well as the weird ones. Welcome to the podcast, Greg.
Hi, Greg.
Guys, thank you so much for having me on. That was a great intro. Wow.
Dude, I always ask our guests to rate our intros out of 10 because we work really hard on them.
It's so hard for me to bring myself to write my intro. That's one of those things like resume writing where I get really self-conscious, like, I'm just going to avoid this job. I don't want to do it. It makes me feel yucky. Like, can I just take that? That was great. Thank you.
Can copy and paste that word for word.
Perfect. Yeah, 100%. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Just pay us like 10% royalties on all future earnings and you're totally good.
10% on all future. Okay, cool. That's
Venmo great. Me $10.
Or a $10 flat rate to Nicole.
$10 flat rate to me. That's okay.
You can buy a cocktail. Hey, what a segue. You can buy one third of a cocktail in Los Angeles at that price.
That's probably about right, too.
But no, so Greg, tell us about your background in cocktails, how you got into it. I mean, I love watching How to Drink.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always looking for cocktail inspiration because I'm like somewhat of a noob to the world. But tell us about your background.
So why drinks? I'll tell you why. There's so many different ways I could tell this story. So you just tell me when I've told enough and I'll stop.
That's great. I'll just scream at you like a banshee.
The short version is that I was just always that weird dude who preferred cocktails to beer when my friends were throwing parties and stuff when I was a younger of age gentleman. Mainly because I don't know why most beers – and I found out recently that no, it's not all beers. It's just the cheap beers my friends were buying make me feel like I ate an entire loaf of bread like after four sips. Like I just cannot breathe and like – why are you enjoying this? I can't. Oh my God. So I like I find the cocktails are just feel lighter and better for me. But the cascade of events that like led to How to Drink is kind of a weird and specific tale. I always had like this interest in cocktails. And I had this PA job in the early 2000s at a place called Michael Schramm & Company where we made food commercials, which was like doing like super slow motion 35mm production of like Wendy's salads exploding and stuff. It was like my first gig. I remember
we built
an air can and blew up.
Love commercial food production.
It was crazy. I mean, like, I got to like absorb by osmosis, I guess, a lot of that like an interest and some of the tricks of the trade of like slow motion macro cinematography and then moved on and filed that away into the back of my brain. And then I went to film school and I got out of film school and I couldn't find a job, and a friend convinced me to become an editor, and I became an editor, and I made a living as an editor freelance like around for a while. And then my wife and I were in the city my girlfriend and I were in the city to propose. I whisked her away to New York for the weekend to propose. We got engaged and we were at this bar. It's called The Back Room. And I was like, not really into it. We were both like, let's get out of here. And I was like, there's a place in this neighborhood called Milk and Honey. I don't know where it is, where you can find it.
That's like they, not to jump the gun here, but they, I believe, are the progenitor of my favorite cocktail of all time, Milk and Honey. They're like a legendary cocktail bar, right?
Yeah. Milk. I mean, sorry too, by the way. I really, I have just dominated the mic since we started the show.
No, you're a guest, man. Take your shoes off. Sit down. Get comfy.
Feel free to just edit like in post, just edit in like air sirens and like responses and stuff.
Has anyone called you like the liquid food Babish? Because I feel like it's given me like
I was just about to say that.
Yeah.
No one has ever said the liquid food Babish.
Yeah, it's not a great liquid food.
It's gross to say that, but
sounds like you're just Babish with no teeth.
I was going to say the cocktail Babish.
Yeah, it makes more sense.
That's just me.
Yeah, I've gotten that comparison once or twice.
So that's awesome, man. And now you've been running the YouTube channel for a couple of years now, right?
6 years.
Wow.
Holy crap, man.
Yeah, man. It was
you're like OG.
Oh, yep, me. OG.
That's OG.
The oldest of G's. It started like much more in drips and drabs where it was like, okay, we will put together a production and we'll shoot. Like literally the first 7 episodes of How to Drink was shot in a very long day in my living room with me and 2 other people. And then I spent, you know, one of those a week was being released. And I said, well, if I get 1,000 subscribers, I guess I'll do more. I thought I was filming like a reel for close-up tabletop food work for directing. And I was like, but also let's make it a web series because I'm a millennial and I got to monetize everything I do.
Smart. Yeah. Smart.
And in reality, I was like, I had nobody to send a reel to. Like everybody, like when I had been working – I was working as an editor and, you know, you could tell your boss like, hey, I would like to direct food commercials. I'd be like, that's great. I don't make those. What do you want from me?
Yeah.
And the people that I had worked with at Michael Schramm & Company only worked at Michael Schramm & Company. And also that was like when I say early, like it was 2003. I was making this show in 2015. So it was like they, most of those people had retired. a lot of these were very old people who had moved on. So I don't know. I didn't know what the hell to do with the daggum reel anyway.
Well, it's funny because, you know, both of us, like you've had a little bit of experience chefing, right? But like I've only worked in the media world and we've actually gotten some comments who were like, how did you get your jobs if you've never been a chef in a restaurant? And it's like, because I have been doing the exact thing that I'm good at and doing right now my entire career. So like the fact that you have a film background, I think it's really cool, and it shows that like that's a hugely important part, right? It's not just I've been, you know, slinging brunch drinks for the last 10 years or something. It's like, no, I'm a professional. I know how to shoot. I know how to edit. I know how to be on camera. I have nothing but respect for the people who make fake food on the internet that no one actually consumes.
Hell yeah. Up top.
Stunt foods.
Stunt food, baby. That's what we do.
Some of it is. All
right, so let's get at the question at hand here. We're talking about what your favorite cocktail says about you. And because I think cocktails are one of those things that are like, I call them like an identity food, right?
Sure.
Like if somebody asks you what your favorite cocktail is, then whatever you tell them, it reveals more about you as a person than it does simply what kind of tastes you like inside your mouth.
Yep.
Right? And so I think it's a really loaded question. And like, I know for myself, what I order at a bar, it depends entirely on the context, right?
Yeah, I mean, everyone has a go-to drink, I would like to think, but it also depends on the environment, what I had to eat that day, who I'm with is also going to depend. That's going to like change my drink order.
Oh, it's a loaded question.
Of course.
But Greg, what do you think like cocktails say about you in general?
I think that, well, first off, well, it's a good question. What do cocktails?
Feel free to disagree. They could say nothing about you, too.
Yeah, what do cocktails say about you? When I first got into cocktails, when I was a young man in the nigh early 2000s, I think what it said about me, particularly not being a guy who lived in Lower Manhattan at that time, was that I was a snob.
Yeah, no, 100%. But that was probably a little bit deliberate by yourself, too. You probably wanted people to think you were punching above your weight class in
a way.
Dude,
when you are a young man trying to find his place in the world, you must project an image. I went to many a wedding in those days and ordered a martini that I hated. And I walked around that wedding with that martini in my hand, wearing a suit, sipping it, thinking like, that's darn right. I'm drinking this martini. I'm a martini man. Look at me. I'm a martini man. No, of course. Absolutely. Now I like martinis, but I don't like those. I still don't like those martinis.
Those
brief martinis. Aside. I can't stand a drop of olive brine in my martini. I love olives, but rinse them off.
Wait, so what is your martini technique? Because I'm on the opposite level where I want it to be about 50-50, just olive juice, sweet vermouth, and a dash of gin.
Sweet vermouth.
Not really, but not sweet vermouth. Sorry.
No, that's fine. Yeah, I think that
actually. No, I don't mess with martinis at all. That is one of those drinks that I don't believe I've ordered more than once at a bar in my entire life.
Oh, really?
I made one and I never went back again.
Yep. Huh.
And so I just don't mess with them. But like, what do you think if somebody says their favorite drink is a martini, what does that say about them?
They're going to need, oh man, I want to give you a short answer, but they need to say a lot more than their, if they only say their favorite drink is a martini, it says to me that they're a very surface based person and they haven't really thought a lot about themselves or their place in the world or their drink order. A martini is so specific to just say my favorite drink is a martini is like saying, I'm trying to think like, my favorite cars have four wheels. Like, you know, it's such a...
Just because there's so many specificities that go into a martini?
Yeah, like, as tiny... I mean, like, if a guy tells me my favorite drink is a Vesper martini, I know two things. They have terrible taste and they wish they were James Bond. Like, that's
it. Yeah.
that's really the only reason to drink a Vesper. It's awful. Although I will say, I have had okay Vespers. Leandro from the Educated Barfly came over to my place and made a Vesper for me that kind of blew my mind. But a stock standard Vesper stinks.
Vesper is what? Lemon twist?
A Vesper is a split-based martini that splits the gin with vodka, which is basically like saying, I like to turn the volume down on my gin. I don't really get it, like why you would split it. It doesn't really make sense.
Because gin is technically just a flavored vodka, right? It's vodka flavored with botanicals in essence.
Some people on the internet would kill me for saying that. But yeah, that's essentially what it is.
It's, okay.
It's way more, it's a little more complicated than that. But essentially it is a neutral, at one point in its life, it comes out of the still as neutral grain spirit. And then it goes back into another still for an infusion process.
Yeah.
Conversely, like bourbon is never neutral grain spirit at any point in its process, right? So like, yeah, by that metric, gin is flavored vodka and also vodka is incomplete gin. And then Quina Lillet. And then there's like this weird thing with the Vesper where Quina Lillet is like the old formulation for Lillet Blanc. They don't make it anymore. Mm-hmm. So you can't get it. And how do you approximate it and stuff like that? And
okay.
Sorry, we're getting way.
Okay, sorry. I wanted to know because
you just sounded really exasperated. You're like,
no,
all right,
I just went through all the James Bond movies, like the ones with Daniel Craig, other than the new one, and I just heard the word Vesper like 50 times. I'm like, what does this mean? But I never wanted to like actually Google it.
The other day, Julia was like, I want to watch all the James Bond movies, and because she's never seen one,
yeah,
and I was like, there's like 45 or something, and she's like, what?
Yeah. I've never.
And I'm
seen
like, they've been making them for 60 years, and she was like, what? Anyways,
I have to share something. So before I knew who I was, when I was like 22 years old, I used to work as a food stylist.
Oh, that's such a good job.
And it was a tough job. I was on my feet all the time. Oh, yeah. I was working at a boutique marketing agency. And I would just, after like a really hard shoot, I would go to the bar with one of the graphic designers and we would both order martinis and chain smoke cigarettes and just sit there and smoke cigarettes and have like a few martinis because that's what I thought I was supposed to do.
Like as an adult, like you're a working woman in the city.
I'm like, I've had a hard day. You know, I've been around a bunch of people, been around a bunch of food. Let me just decompress.
Yeah.
So in my mind, a working woman that was there to decompress would always order a martini.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's what I would always do. And then I realized, I'm like, do I really like these?
This was Sex and the City days?
I don't think, no.
This would have been a little bit post that when people started rewatching Sex and the City on the streaming platform and they were like, oh, this didn't age well.
Oh, man.
This didn't age well.
Yeah, so that's what I always thought. I thought a martini was for the working girl, you know? That's what I always thought.
Yeah, that's kind of similar with me in old fashions because that was the one whiskey I knew that, I mean, I think gender plays a huge role in this, right?
100%.
Like Sex and the City, obviously, with the Cosmos and the martinis.
Yeah.
And then you grow up with this idea, especially like college, a lot of your drinking opinions are formed. It's like dudes are supposed to drink dark liquor. White liquor is for cat owners. You know, it has that kind of like Ron Swanson, except people didn't understand the irony sort of vibe to it.
Yeah.
And so the old fashioned was like the only whiskey drink that I really knew. And so, you know, that's what I would go to, even though it's like, sugar whiskey. Nice. I mean, I still love a good, well-crafted old fashioned, whatever. I can appreciate it. But that was my version of that was and also chain smoking cigarettes.
Yeah, right.
We were confused. We didn't know.
I never got
we didn't know the harms
anymore.
Back then, Nicole.
Yeah.
The data wasn't available.
It was available. I was just blind to it.
But I never got the smoking bug. I'm not going to lie.
Good for you.
Never bit.
It sucks.
Mazel.
It sucks.
Greg, if I were to ask you right now, if you wanted to communicate to me the best version of yourself, and I said, what is your favorite cocktail?
Okay.
What do you tell us?
My favorite cocktail is a Mai Tai.
Okay.
That's my standard response.
Can you just like go through the general Mai Tai recipe? If you got any notes on the history, please enlighten the crowd.
So Mai Tai was invented by Trader Vic, Vic Bergeron, in I think 1944. I think it's a 1944 drink is what it dates to. My spec is to do a split base of rums. I do 1 ounce of a funky Jamaican rum. I like Smith and Cross, and I do 1 ounce of a Demerara rum, like an Eldorado 5-year or something like that. 1 ounce of lime juice, 1/2 ounce of dry curacao, 1/2 ounce to 1 ounce of orgeau, which is a French almond syrup, and then 1/4 ounce of simple syrup. But as I've gotten older, I've simplified things. I say, what do you need that simple syrup for? It's just sweet. Let's get it out. Replace it with orgeau. I shake it over crushed ice, serve it on the ice it's served on, and then you take so the visual presentation obligates you to take an upturned lime husk and put it in there wrong side up so that it looks like a little island. This does nothing for the flavor or like experience of drinking the drink, but it's a visual, like, you know, you're supposed to do it. And on the internet, if you do things wrong, people yell at you.
I will say
a sprig of fresh mint is vital. I hate making a Mai Tai without the sprig of mint, because you want to bury your face in that mint when you're drinking the drink, and the whole thing works together at once. I freaking love a really perfect Mai Tai. It is to me like, God, it has so much going on in it, and yet there's nothing you can take away. Like, it is the engineer's perfection. Like, it's done because there's nothing left to remove. It is all of the complexity that we lost in Prohibition, you know, in the golden age of cocktails was actually like the mid-1800s, and we made it illegal during Prohibition, and the bartenders went out of business or they went overseas, and we lost a lot of that. And that's where you get like these 2 and 3 ingredient drinks from, is a super simplified mixology. And then it's the post-war period, and people are doing tiki now, and all of a sudden there's this explosion in super complicated drinks. Like, I think the Mai Tai is really the apex of the form, where it's just like everything is there doing a job and intention and in balance and presenting a thing that's more than the sum of its parts. But the drink I drink the most is an old fashioned, because I'm very lazy.
Fair, honestly. Okay, so the Mai Tai thing is really fascinating to me, because tiki drinks, we're on this huge resurgence of tiki drinks, right?
I think, yeah.
At least we all live in like large market areas where you can say crap like, Mai Tais are back.
Yeah,
and we can.
And espresso?
Espresso martinis
are huge right now.
No kidding.
That's a big thing.
I love getting.
Dude, yeah, you can't spit and not hit an espresso martini.
They're huge in LA right now.
City right now. But the Mai Tai,
I don't know what's up in LA, man.
There was a restaurant in Los Angeles that was serving a $40 Mai Tai.
Where?
And that was like a thing. It was
better be a good one.
What's that Koreatown spot? The fancy one? I don't know. Whatever.
I don't know.
But anyways, point is that was like a thing. Like, they sent around a press release. Like, we have a $40 Mai Tai. It's crafted exactly from, you know, the Trader Vic's recipe, except using this rum and this rum and whatever. And so they made a whole big play of it. But it was kind of this ironic high-low thing, right? Because for a while, people thought of tiki drinks as fun party drinks. Oh, they're just sweet. They have a bunch of fruit juice instead of mask the alcohol, et cetera. That was the thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But then now they're completely back. It's like a chef making, you know, the $25 poutine, where they're just like, stoner food, baby, it's in. With apologies to the entire country of Canada for calling your national dish stoner food. But like, let's be real,
it's
fries and gravy, baby.
That's
right. But anyway, so like, if you told me your favorite drink is a Mai Tai, knowing you and your credentials, I would be like, this is a man who is not afraid of what people's opinions would be about him. Like, you know what you want out of life, but also you're so sort of on the cutting edge that you know this is almost like the correct answer for the time period. If that makes sense. That's what I'm saying. You know?
This is just a podcast about judging each other.
You're like a time traveler.
We're just judging each other at this.
You're like the omniscient time traveler who's like, Mai Tais are back, ergo, my favorite drink is a Mai Tai. You know why? Because I can back it up with history and facts, and drinks like tiki cocktails are the ones that brought back nobility to the cocktail craft. Dead ass honest right here. That's what I think. Is that accurate at all?
I gotta parse what you just said about me and make sure I understand the statement here. Now, because I heard two conflicting points here. You said I don't care about what people think about me, but you also said that I've chosen this drink because
you want people to think that you don't care what they think.
Oh,
it's meta.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. I probably do care what people think, but I don't.
Yeah, yeah. I think we all do.
I want to believe that I don't care what people think about me. But
which is why you drink Mai Tais.
But I do. No, I drink them because they're delicious, because I love them.
That's just the tip of the iceberg.
That's the actual truth. Yeah.
I mean, all alcohol tastes like poison. How many layers do we want to peel back here?
What's your relationship like with your mother?
Don't start.
You know, it's straight. It's complicated.
That happens. You know, we've all been there. Josh, your mom's nice.
My mom's the best. My mom will be all your moms. Okay, Josh, tell us.
You'd love Shala, Greg. She's the best.
What does your favorite cocktail say about you, Josh? What do you think?
Oh, crap. Okay, so Greg and I have already talked about this a little bit, so I think he knows the answer. Okay. We talked about the bar in New York that invented it, and it's a relatively new drink. It is the penicillin.
Oh you talk about this
it is
all
the penicillin.
Time.
It is blended scotch. I'll typically use monkey shoulder. Why? Because liquor.com probably said that that's a good one.
Oh.
And I was like, it's only $40. Mm-hmm. As far as a blended scotch goes, I couldn't tell you what better thing to do. I've tried using some Japanese whiskeys because I want people to think I'm more cultured than I actually am.
Uh-huh.
But really, I just went to BevMo and didn't care how much money I spent.
Nice.
And then I'll use some Lafroig quarter cask with a little floaty on top. Yeah, I add a little bit of fresh ginger juice because I own cheesecloth and I can do that.
Yeah.
And I make my own little honey syrup like once every 2 weeks because sometimes I don't even put the honey syrup in the fridge, even though I should, but I want it on the bar cart. And then, you know what? It gets moldy.
Flies.
And then I
got
to throw it away.
Yeah. Flies do jump in there, yeah.
But that's my favorite drink. That's my all-time number one answer.
What does that drink say about you? That's interesting. I think that drink says you want to be very interesting. You want people...
More than anything in the world, Greg.
That's a very cutting edge drink. You want people to know, oh, what is that? What is that drink? Mm-hmm. That's not something most people have heard of. I've heard of that. And you obviously have heard of that. But I think that, you know, if we're going to be a little scathing here, I think that's what that drink says. Yeah.
Oh, you're not scathing at all. No, you hit it on the head. My God. We have a podcast. Like, all we want is for people to talk to us and think we're interesting.
Yeah. True that.
My favorite comment I get on YouTube is, You're just doing stuff that people want to see. It's like, yes, I didn't fall on the upload button. Like, I made a trick.
Exactly. Thank you. True.
That is when people talk about the idea of clickbait. It's just like, I think we make funny, good things, and I want more people to see that funny, good thing.
So, yeah, of course.
Chef doesn't make food that he thinks people want to throw on the ground.
That's true.
Of course.
Josh, I think the penicillin says, well, number one, I have an allergy to penicillin. Did you know that?
You're so interesting for having an allergy to penicillin, Nicole.
As my emergency contact, you should just know that.
I'm not your emergency contact.
Of course
contact.
You're not my emergency
I don't know.
Contact. I was trying to be cute.
I shouldn't be anyone's emergency contact.
Josh, that was a bit. You stomped all over it.
Yeah, do you see what I deal with? I kind of just to piggyback on what you said, I think you want to be interesting. I think you are interesting. So
thank you.
So yeah, I mean, it's a unique drink. Not everyone knows what a penicillin is.
The first time I had it was at a speakeasy in Tel Aviv.
Wow, sounds accurate.
How interesting is that?
That's interesting.
They have speakeasies in Tel Aviv.
Yeah, at least one.
Yeah,
it's never been. The other thing it says too is you have to like scotch. I mean, you have to like a smoky scotch. Mm. To me, that Lafroig ginger combo, I respect it. It's not my thing though, honestly.
Mm. No, that's always been a combo that I've really loved. Even like my favorite cookie is just a very heavy spiced ginger snap. I got some Tate's ginger snaps the other day.
Mm-hmm.
What a delight!
All about
paired it,
it
with a look with a White Claw black cherry.
Wow, you're
lovely.
A man of taste.
Now that's a cocktail, folks.
You're a man of taste.
Now every kitchen can be a Mythical kitchen.
The Mythical cookbook is available now, so go to mythical.com/cookbook and get yourself a copy today.
Nicole, same question applies to you.
Okay.
Where are you at?
I'm a simple girl. I just love Negronis a lot.
Oh, yeah.
First of all, I think they're delicious. And people are like, I like to taste my alcohol. I actually do like the taste of all three of those alcohols together. It's gin, vermouth, Campari. I do like the way that they taste. I like the way that it makes my tummy feel because I believe it's an aperitif or a digestif. I don't know. Whatever it is, I just like the way it makes me feel. Also, I there's just like this feeling of holding that cup when everyone around me is drinking a skinny, spicy margarita.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's again, it's that uniqueness. It's like no one else is going to be drinking this, so I'm going to be drinking it. So I think it also feeds to my like desire to be unique, the desire to be the one girl that does this.
Yeah.
So it definitely
I like that you're sort of like almost unique in its sparseness, right? Because it's a 1-1-1 cocktail,
right? I don't need mixers, yeah.
You don't, it's just three liquors thrown in a glass. But that said, it's also like, it's a visually striking drink. You see a Negroni, it's the bright red from the Campari, you know, and you just see someone holding that. It's almost like a beacon. It's like you're attracting attention to yourself. But then when people go, what is that? And you're like, oh, it's really just three liquors in a glass. And you can kind
you
of
drink this
demure.
In an old-fashioned glass or in a stemware on the rocks or neat or up, rather.
I like it in a whiskey glass.
Yeah.
Big ice cube.
Damn right.
Clear ice.
That's the clear ice. But fun fact about me, I lived with my parents up until like a few months ago because I just got married. So I've never been able to make my own cocktails.
Oh.
I've never had the freedom or the ability to just go into my kitchen and mix up a drink. But it's something that I'm starting to experiment with now. And I'm very happy about it.
What have you been experimenting with? Like, do you see your taste changing now?
Well, I've only opened two bottles of whiskey. One of them was a Japanese whiskey. And I've opened one bottle of gin. So I've kind of just been playing around. I still don't know
what
I
was it the botanist gin?
Yeah, I stole it from work.
we steal a lot of liquor from work.
I
Workplace
borrowed it.
Theft is a big hobby of ours.
It's part of the research budget. You guys have a culinary-oriented operation.
You're right.
You have to take those things home and work with them. I mean, I don't understand the problem there. It seems fine.
That's actually what it is. It's all from the show Fancy Fast Food that we do, where you know we try and make like Baconator or whatever as expensive as we can.
I had a version of that. I wanted to do that for one episode. I wanted to do the most expensive old fashioned because I got this bottle of Pappy Van Winkle, and I thought that would really annoy people to mix with it. Exactly.
Half our content strategy is just pissing people off.
I've been trying to get my hands on that for a minute. It's very hard to
stop
get your hands on.
Don't worry about it. You don't
okay, fine.
Yeah,
okay,
it's
fine.
Very overpriced.
It's for the show.
Oh, well, you can get anything you want with money.
You're right.
But it's over. People are like, oh boy, where'd you find it? And I was like, with a lot of money. You know, and I was like, but how do I make an old fashioned more expensive? And I was like, maybe we get like vintage aged bitters or something. They don't exist. There's nothing I could do. The only thing I could do is like have there's no that's
gold.
It. Like there's nothing.
You go harvest sugar yourself.
Ugh, what a process.
Man. Yeah.
Who has time for that?
You know, go it's like make it yourself. Just like take the sugarcane juice, you know, dehydrate it in an oven. Really do that. I'm curious. Okay, so we've talked about our current favorite drinks, but like, where did we all start? Because you mentioned the martini at a wedding.
Sure.
And for me, that sort of moment was, especially at college parties, because I mean, I could, not to brag and jump back into that toxic masculine mindset of 21-year-old me, but I could really crush some light beer. That is the thing that I'm very, Milwaukee's best light, they really go down easy.
Sure
but that said, especially as I got a little bit older, I was like, I want to present to people that I am a food and I know cocktails, so I'm going to make a dark and stormy.
Those are
and
good.
I would muddle fresh mint with lime, and I don't even think you're supposed to do that for a dark and stormy.
Nope.
And then I would add it. You're certainly not, but hey, it made me look really cool because I got a little cocktail shaker for $10.
Yeah.
And then I would put the rum in it, and then I would decant that out and pour ginger beer and squeeze some lime in it into a red Solo cup and say, do you want a dark and stormy? And someone would go, what's that? And I go, it's a cocktail.
That's great.
Yeah. And so that was my kind of like first foray into like, this is people assume something about you because of what you're drinking. And I would do that. And boy, were people impressed at a party.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just flat and gross and watered down. And I'm fine with it.
Were they impressed? I think that my dumb martinis, I wanted them to impress you, but I think that people like, it didn't really work for me. I think that the ladies at those parties were like, what a stiff, what a square. Who is that guy?
Yeah, don't make me have a more accurate view of my past self, because I think there's a lot of things I'd look back on and really cringe. I would make it with crack and rum also.
Oh,
yeah,
that's nice.
Upsetting.
You know what?
Go ahead.
I was just say crack and rum. People are always on me about my dislike of spiced rum. I'm working on an episode about spiced rum and why I hate it. And you know what crack and rum always reminds me of? Similar time frame in your young 20s. You ever get dragged to a hookah bar?
Oh, no, I'm doing the dragon, baby. I love me a hookah bar.
You know the vanilla goop hookah tobacco, the one that's
mm-hmm. yeah.
that's what Kraken tastes like.
Smells like a strip club. I love it.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
But a little bit.
We should do best hookah flavor. That's a good podcast.
Oh yeah. It's apple, star it's Starbucks, apple, and Al Fokker mint.
Ah, oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got
we'll
it. I'm a menthol honeydew guy.
Ew.
Yeah.
Honeydew.
Give me the mint and the melon.
Mm. Actually, mint melon's really good.
It's a good one.
Actually, it's really
okay,
good.
Okay, what are other cocktails that you think, like, if you had any advice for, you know, a person, say they don't know a ton about, you know, cocktails, if they're to yeah. go to a bar, because I remember going to a bar and feeling a bit intimidated, right? I was like, I'm not sure. going to know the right words. I remember the first time I went to a bar, I was nervous I was going to say the wrong thing. And so I said, gin and tonic, please. And they said, what kind of gin? And I was like, oh, remember gin commercials? And I was like, Tanqueray.
Yeah. I knew it.
Tanqueray is great.
And so that was like my sort of, you know, first go-to drink at a bar. But what do you think a good go-to is? It's not going to make a bartender hate you and is going to make people around you love you and finally make you love yourself.
Bartenders hate making mojitos.
Mm.
They hate making them. They hate muddling. Don't make them muddle. Mm-hmm. It's not going to come up accidentally, but it goes without saying, don't order a Ramos Gin Fizz. They don't like that. You ask if you're allowed to order that, but you're also not going to accidentally find yourself in a place where you could order that.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And that's, I think about it, but also I don't work in, I've never worked in a bar, as you pointed
out.
Oh
yeah, that came up.
I don't even know. What's a good first go-to drink? I think that you got to read the room. I mean, this is kind of a cop-out answer, but like you got to know if they want to be doing cocktails here, if this is a beer and shot place, you know?
Yeah. Well, sometimes it's not clear. I went to this bar a while ago and it was very much a crowded party bar at the time. Like they had a DJ on set and it's just people sweating, rave raining from the roof.
Right.
But that said, it's like a supper club earlier in the day. It's a, what do they call it? It's a clubsterant,
yeah.
if you will. Yep. And so they had this craft cocktail. They had this like craft cocktail list up where it says like old fashioned, but there's like 19 ingredients that are not in an old fashioned. Mm. And they're like burnt orange, demerara syrup, whatever. And then there are people ordering, you know, with 50 people in line, they're like, give me the old fashioned. And these bartenders are just like furiously muddling.
Pounding them out,
and
yeah.
in that situation, you just get a tequila soda.
Right.
And you just crush it.
Always a tequila soda.
So always tequila soda.
My first, I'll look at the cocktail menu. That's my first thing. You know, I don't want to order a cocktail from a bar that doesn't want to make cocktails. And the first thing to do is like, do they have a cocktail menu? I'll look at that. I'll try to pick out one. Cause generally I think this should be their best foot forward, right? This is what they want you to order. So I'll try that. And if that drink isn't good, my next drink's probably a Dark and Stormy because that's really hard to mess up. That's my go-to for, oh, you don't really like to do cocktails. And, you know, I do like some beers, but none of the ones I like are on the menu here or that look appealing to me are on the menu here. I will have a Dark and Stormy. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
That's my go-to.
My sort of handshake to the bar is because the penicillin is something that if you're at like a craft cocktail bar, it's dedicated to craft cocktails. If it's not on the menu, they can definitely make it. But sometimes there's that little, you know, where you're like two drinks deep and you've drank whatever's on the menu. And then you pull someone aside and go, can you do a penicillin?
Yep.
And then sometimes they take that as like a challenge. I went to a bar once. I was like, can you do a penicillin? The guy was like, yeah, I might have to make like a substitution. But yeah, and I was like, all right. And then he brings me like a highball glass with like soda in it. And I was like, what's going on here? He's like, so we didn't have ginger syrup and we didn't have any like scotch. And so what this is, it's like passion fruit soda with whiskey in it. And I was like, that's not even close.
That's okay.
But I didn't read the room. They were also like a coffee bar also. And this is at 11 a.m. Oh. I was catching a flight in Austin. It was a whole thing.
Interesting.
And so that was one of those things where I was like, you played yourself, Josh. You played yourself
you
on this one.
That one's not going
to I
work
wanted him
for
to
you.
Think I was interesting. And now he just hates
that's
me.
Okay.
Greg, you got any closing remarks here? We're about that time. We finish things up. I think we've really gone down the Freudian and Jungian rabbit hole. People always forget to throw Jung in there.
I never do.
Do you have any closing remarks about, like, you know, do you think that cocktails should carry this sort of weight? Do you think they should say things about you, or should people just drink what the hell they want?
I think that both of those statements are absolutely true, and you took the words out of my mouth. I think not only do your cocktails say something about you, but the way that you walk says something about you, and the clothing you wear says something about you. And if you really want to go down this path, you'll drive yourself crazy. And at the end of the day, what you should do is forget what those people, what people are hearing you say, unless you're saying something, unless you're getting heard say something you really don't want to say. And do what you actually enjoy. But yeah, but also at the same time, like, of course people are judging your drink. I mean, they probably shouldn't
to
be,
the world.
Of course they are. Yeah, right? Like, that's what's happening.
Amen, man. I've been told that I walk like a mother about to scorn a child, and I don't know what that means.
That's
with intention. You got someplace to go.
All right, Nicole and Greg, we've heard what you and I have to say. Now it's time to find out what other wacky ideas are rattling out there in the Twitterverse. It's time for a segment we call
Opinions Are Like Casseroles.
We got at DLandry63, fish markets don't actually stink. They smell great. Anyone that disagrees doesn't actually like fish.
Hmm.
I have been to both kinds. I have been, I hate to have the, I'm going to walk the middle line here, but yeah, a fish market that's working properly smells fine. I have no problem with the smell of a fish market that is in sound operation, but there's a fish market down the road from me that has had some refrigerant problems.
Yeah, that's tough.
And nah, man, that ain't good. That's a bad smell.
I know exactly where this person's coming from, though, and I, like, really 85% of the way agree with them. Because I think when people talk about fish, right, I heard Food Network chefs growing up all the time being like, your fish shouldn't smell fishy. If it smells fishy, it went bad. No, it's a fish.
It's a fish.
Yeah, it should smell like a damn fish. And also the quote-unquote fishier tasting fish, like things like mackerel, right? Yeah. They're like the most delicious. It's more fish per fish.
Yeah.
That you get. Don't water down my fish. Mm. I want my fish to smell like fish. I want it to taste like fish. I got to go to the market that smells like fish, and I don't mind it because it reminds me I'm eating fish.
The other thing about fish market too is like the fish are not yet cleaned, so they still have their scales and all the brine and stuff from the ocean. Like, there's a lot of other smells happening at the fish market than the fish.
Yeah, it's fair.
You know, you guys are too nice. I think fish markets smell really bad, even the clean ones. They're not pleasant. They're gross. I don't like them. Sorry.
It's like a cheese cave.
But do you like a lot of fish?
I love fish. I'm a sushi fiend. No, I don't. I can't.
Like, I can recognize a cheese cave or a cheese store or whatever smells bad, but I enjoy the products.
Yeah, that smells good.
What? No.
Cheese cave smells good. Fish markets smell bad.
Either my feet smell good. But cheese stores smell good or they smell bad. You got to pick them. You can't think my feet smell bad in the office and that cheese store smell good.
I've never not once been that close to your feet.
No time like the bro. All right. Nicole, you go.
Dump the segment. Okay. This is getting weird.
Yeah. It gets a little
Greg,
weird.
You're invited. Come down and smell my feet.
Sarah Chow 96, his sweet pickles are better than dill pickles. What say you?
No. That person's wrong.
They are. I like dill pickles more than sweet pickles.
I don't mean to always play devil's advocate here, but you ever eat a sweet pickle? And if you don't think of it as a pickle, if you think of it as a candy cucumber, it's pretty nice.
No, you're right.
It's a nice, well-refrigerated candy cucumber. But as far as serving the needs of a pickle, nah.
I love a sweet pickle, but I would never rank it above a proper dill pickle. My God.
Me
That's
neither.
Tough. You know? That's tough. All right. Here we go. At ThomasFowl223. Okay, hear me out. That's how you know it's going to be a good opinion.
That's a good
American
start.
Cheese on PB&J. It's amazing.
Yeah, I'll hear that out. I'd give that a try. I don't think I'm going to like it, but I would try it.
Yeah.
I'm willing to be convinced. I'm willing.
It's about 60 cents worth of ingredients, so you're not right. The opportunity cost isn't crazy.
Right. Exactly.
I'll do it.
Should we all pledge to do it?
YOLO.
I think we should all pledge to do it. And then, this would be a great little, we're all looking to diversify across platforms. We can all try it. We'll post on the social media on the day this comes out.
No.
Yeah, I got a lot of stuff to do. That sounds
Come
difficult.
On.
I'll do it.
Greg will do
fine.
It.
Fine. Okay, fine.
We're
we'll
all
do
in.
It. Okay, fine.
We're all in. Someone write
we're
that
going to start the PBJ and the PBJ and PBJC challenge. PBJC challenge.
How do you abbreviate pasteurized processed cheese product?
PPCP.
I don't like PPC.
You know, PPCP and PB sandwich.
Can I reveal an embarrassing food fact about my own life right now?
Absolutely.
That's what this is for.
I was left to my own devices a lot after school when I got home, and I would peruse the house looking for snacks, and I would come up with unusual combinations. And one of the things I settled on as one of my favorite after school snacks as a wee middle schooler was an Entenmann's chocolate eclair paired with a large deli-style dill pickle.
Eaten together or separately in alternating bites?
Like alternating bites. And because of the really extreme contrasting flavors between the salty mm-hmm. and the sweet of them. And also I liked that they were roughly the same form factor. So like they were the same volumetric amount of food. That's just like some weird OCD thing that was going on in my brain. But very tasty in your mouth. Made me sick many times. Kept going back for more.
That's your rosebud, man. That's your rosebud. That's how you, because when you're talking about the Mai Tai, you're talking about like the perfect balance.
Yeah.
You know, these. That's the chocolate eclair and the pickle.
That could be mm-hmm. it.
It's it. We found it.
Yeah.
So when people tell me that American cheese goes good with peanut butter and jelly, I won't judge. I'm willing to try that. I'm going to try it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We've all done stuff, man. We've all done deep, dark stuff.
BC Simmons 04 says, double the amount of garlic in every recipe. All these recipes calling for one or two cloves ain't cutting it.
It's tough.
I think that if you want it more garlicky, yeah, maybe it needs more garlic. But I also think that if you're not getting enough flavor expression from your food, you have actually undersalted.
Yeah. Salt is the baseline from which all flavor harmonies are written.
Yep.
You're smart.
You need a little more salt in there before you commit to going. Because if you put too much garlic in something, you're going to feel it. One hour after dinner, you're going to have some monstrous heartburn.
True.
Maybe bring up the gain on your microphone just a little bit before you start putting in a bunch of, distortion pedals and stuff like that. I'm trying to think of that's a really stupid analogy.
I listen to a lot of Korn, and so distortion pedals are kind of my thing.
Oh, okay. Korn's like your favorite band?
What do you think that says about me?
You are 12.
Yeah, fair enough. I'm just saying they were kind of revolutionary for the new metal genre.
That they were.
What I would say about thank you. What I would say about the garlic thing is I agree with this in the sense that I think you should either have zero cloves of garlic or 30. Okay. Here's the thing. No. I'm a big evangelist on the idea of people are cramming too many ingredients together in the same recipes and then being mad that they're not tasting the garlic. It's like, well, if you want to taste more garlic, you can A, add more garlic, B, take other things out of there. Make it about the garlic. If you're into garlic, piccata, right? Piccata got what, 5 ingredients in it? Mm-hmm. Make one of those ingredients, 30 cloves of garlic, have a fun time. If you're making a giant bolognese, I know garlic seems important to that. Omit the one clove of garlic in that bolognese, you're not going to know the difference.
You might be right.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's like black pepper and bay leaves. Like, let them be the star.
Black pepper and Baileys?
Bay leaves.
Oh. Bay leaves.
I was like, what you got
going on? The cocktail portion's done now. I like garlic. I mean, I don't understand why. Like, I see all the memes, like, recipe calls for 2 cloves garlic, and it's like mountain of garlic. I love garlic, but I'm not, like, obsessed with it in a way that I need to put it in all my food, like, times 2.
We've fetishized garlic as a society.
We have.
It's very strange.
Yeah, I
fetishized shallots.
I'm down.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Change the narrative.
Yeah, I'm down.
I think a lot of recipes should leave themselves room for, like, to taste. Because, like, you know, what kind of garlic did you buy? Did you buy that weird purple elephant garlic that's huge? Those are big cloves, but they're not very powerful tasting. Did you get, like, you know what I mean? Like, maybe you live someplace where garlic comes out really strong and you need to adjust that. I have basically been trying to work that into my own show too. Is like, you know, well, you know, the simple syrup is always to taste. It's always to taste.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everything in food is to taste. Don't make it if you don't taste it and it tastes good.
Yeah. Taste your food always.
This next one, it's kind of cocktail adjacent. I'm proud that we got one.
Yeah.
At Hating Since 87, lemons are superior to limes in every way.
Ooh.
Yeah. You jump in, Greg.
They're more versatile. They are more useful. You can definitely do more with a lemon than a lime. I can't say that they're superior. I'm not a lemon supremacist. I can't get on board with that kind of a reasoning. I think that, like, for one, it's edited out of every episode of How to Drink that you hear me squeeze a lime. But there's footage in every single lime squeeze of me on camera saying it doesn't go to air. God dang, I just love the smell of limes. It just smells like vacation every single time. Like, it's just like such a transportive, like the combination of limes and rum to me are so powerful in some like part way back in my brain stem that I can't go with that. But I will recognize that lemons are more versatile. One more thought. I'm going to keep talking. You're not going to get to stop me. Lemons are way more versatile. You can do so much more with them. But all of my personal favorite things demand limes. I want some Cuban black beans and rice. I need limes. And I want a daiquiri or something like that. I need limes. I want a Mai Tai. I need limes. Lemon is going to be a very poor substitution in any of those things.
I feel that. Lemons are, like, I'd say their limes have a bit of more bitterness and character to them, right? Lemons are a bit sweeter, have less pure citric acid flavor, a little bit more fruitiness to it.
True.
And also there's more juice, which I understand. There's more juice per lemon. Yeah. I get where they're coming from. That said, that bitterness in a lime, that's the beauty. That's where the money's made, baby. You squeeze that. I mean, one, in cocktails, lemon and lime, they go way different directions, right? But then even on food, like, I'm thinking there was a lime shortage at taco trucks in California for a minute.
Really?
And so they were serving lemons.
Ugh.
And it just, it didn't work. Like, the lime, the bitterness cutting through that, like, sweet cinnamon on the al pastor, you know, the lemon just didn't cut it.
Yeah.
And so I know where he's coming from. Like, when I'm squeezing fresh juice for cocktails, which is something that I do very often because I'm very cool and interesting, you get, like, four times the juice out of lemon than you do a lime.
Oh, absolutely.
I agree. I wonder what would happen if we had lime juice and lemon juice with a little bit of extra citric acid in it, if people could tell the difference.
Yeah, I think you could. I think they're really different in character.
Dave Arnold, I think, does that.
Really?
Yeah, if you get Liquid Intelligence, he's got like a whole bunch of like future ingredients that he developed and stuff like, and I'm pretty sure it's in that book. Maybe I'm misquoting. If I am, I apologize. But I think it's in there. He has a thing called lime acid and lemon acid, which are basically like how to make the isolated acids from both of those things and concentrate
them.
Nice.
Jeez.
That's awesome.
Yeah, there's a lot of wild stuff in there that's like, okay, that takes I need a rotary evaporation machine. Like, I'm not going to do that.
Dude, we tried to buy a $100,000 rotovap and no one would.
We did?
Well, we made a really half-hearted effort. No, this is like 2 weeks ago. Me and Ben got really into it for a minute.
I would have totally.
And on that note, thank you for listening to A Hot Dog is a Sandwich. If you want to hear more from us here in the Mythical Kitchen, we got new episodes for you every Wednesday.
Don't you want to thank him for being here?
Nicole, we do it at the end of this.
Oh, we do?
Yeah, that's how it always works.
Oh,
we find Maggie's rap on the sign, and then I say something controversial. You try and respond to it. I cut you off by ending it.
Darn
and then
it.
We say talk
I'm
to Greg
sorry.
At the end.
That sounded abrupt. I was unprepared. I was like, whoa. And he just
Me too.
Ends the show. Wow.
I was like, whoa.
She's like, I'm done.
Kinda.
Okay, now I say my part.
Yeah,
sorry.
Yeah.
If you want to be featured on Opinions Are Like Casseroles, you can hit us up on Twitter at Mythical Chef or @NHandyZada with the hashtag Opinion Casserole.
And for more Mythical Kitchen, check us out on YouTube where we launch new videos every week.
And of course, if you want to share pictures of your dishes, hit us up on Instagram at Mythical Kitchen.
Greg, thanks so much for joining us, man. I realize how messed it up it is that we put our own plugs before we let you plug what you
That's
should plug.
That's what I was saying.
That's terrible.
I don't want to do that
I wish
anymore.
I could turn back the wheels of time.
No.
Truly, I mean, this is a really enlightening conversation. I feel like we broke down a lot of bridges, found out that Nicole is the healthiest relationship with her mother out of all of us. Mazel tov. That's pretty exciting.
I could have told
you. But yeah, man, where can people find you?
You can find me on YouTube. If you do a search for How to Drink, you'll find me. I'm there. You can find me on Instagram and also on Twitter at How to Drink, but there it's got a number in it because I couldn't get my actual handle. And that's, you'll find me if you look for me. I'm not that hard.
Yeah. All right. We'll see y'all next time.